It's time to know your lane.
In hockey, this is not only supported, this is
a badge of honor.
Oh, absolutely. You're an agitator. You're a pain in the ass. You're a guy who the other teams hate. This is something that is going to put you on the map as a player. Why does anyone care if Stroman's hated by other teams?
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, Steve Simmons. Al Bernstein will join us later in the hour. He's calling the fight for Showtime, McGregor, Mayweather. You're going to be down there as of next Tuesday, right?
I'm there Tuesday and right through to fight night and home on Sunday.
So are you excited for this? Does it feel like a job for you?
Well, it's always a job, but I've been to Vegas probably in the neighborhood of 45 or 50 times for somewhat large events boxing-wise. And so you're kind of used to the normal thing. This isn't the normal thing. So I'm not sure what to expect. I'm not sure what kind of scene we're going to see. I'm not sure who the people are going to be in the casinos compared to who the people were, you know, back in the, you know, Larry Holmes days and the Mike Tyson days and the Sugar Ray Leonard days and those kind of things when I was in Vegas an awful lot. And boxing was much bigger than it is today. So I'm curious really to see what the scene is, how people are excited, how people are into it, and then sort of as it gets closer and closer, what's going to happen, the intrigue around it. And that's grown exponentially since this promotion has started, and now it looks like, you know, they may be coming close to the pay-per-view numbers that they were talking about, which are gigantic.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if they'll break records. I don't know what the initial projections were, but they're going to make a lot of money. There are going to be a lot of buys worldwide, but I think in terms of the scene in Vegas, what you'll see is more mainstream media than you would for even the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight a couple of years ago.
See, I'm not sure that that will be the case based on what I saw in Toronto for the event at the news conference down at the Budweiser stage. Because what we saw there was mainstream media, but there was a ton of online bloggers and primarily MMA-related media. There were a lot of people I'd never seen before. And normally, because I've been doing these events for so many years, you get to know who the people are. You know, it's the same guys in every fight, the same people. You know, there was basically a crew of about four of us who went to most big fights in this country, or both big fights in North America. And it was the same four guys or five guys all the time. And after a while, you knew everybody. You tend to travel together. I think this is going to be different. I think it's going to be a much larger and more diverse press corps than we've seen before, because also that's the way the world has changed. You know, the media is way more diverse than it's ever been before.
Yeah, my understanding is Vegas has changed too. It's become more of a theme park than what it used to be in the grittier era back in the 80s and early 90s.
What always fascinated me about doing boxing and still does, and that's why I'm kind of excited to go, because I haven't been in a long time, is who the people are there. Because boxing is the only sport that I've ever covered that attracts everyone. And by everyone, I mean the homeless guy and the guy from middle America who doesn't have a dime and an African-American audience, which you don't see for other sports, and the well-to-do sheiks from the Middle East coming in on their private jets and their private planes, and they get their own tables in the casinos. And it's almost like, you know, a scene from a movie. You know, you could be in Ocean's 11 and going walking through the casino, and you just see so many different walks of life, so many different kinds of people. And most sports sort of attract one kind or a similar kind. And I don't find that with boxing historically, you get that. Now you add another element. You add the MMA element to it. Now add another element, the Irish element.
Right. So Irish, suddenly, European.
You're going to get all of the people from Europe coming. It's going to get a huge European crowd, I believe.
But only so many can get into the building. That's another thing.
I know, with the scene around, like sometimes it's not about getting into the building. It's about who's around the casinos and who's in the places and who's making noise and who's in the bars. And there is nothing to compare to the night of.
No.
In sport. This could be the worst fight ever. But that moment when those two guys are walking to the ring and everybody is standing and there's a feeling in your stomach. It's like, it's almost like the building is vibrating. And you can feel it differently than you feel at any other event. One of the only things I could possibly compare it to is the national anthem at Chicago Stadium, or the historical national anthem at Chicago Stadium, now the United Center. But you get that feeling, and the whole, when they start round one, and you just, the bell goes, and you don't know. There is an excitement about that that almost you can't compare, because no other sport can end 10 seconds later.
And can be so vicious and, yeah, so unpredictable, and has the buildup and the hatred that is not only encouraged, it's embraced, it's understood that there has to be hate between these two fighters, even though probably 95% of the time you know it's completely bogus. Like, I don't think these guys hate each other.
I don't think they really hate each other. No,
This is money.
This is a promotion. But this is a business.
But they're trying to pretend like they do hate each other.
Yeah, they try and build that up.
That happens all the time.
And there's always, how do we sell the fight? There's always that's
But generally it's the same script. These two guys hate each other. They're going to talk smack. There's going to be, what is unique about this is, there is an underdog, clearly, just based on the actual performing of boxing. And the practice of boxing, clearly McGregor is an underdog. But in terms of the public perception, there isn't. These guys are both kind of alpha dogs.
Except that's where the sell is different. And that's where you see that they're trying to sell McGregor having a chance. Because the more chance McGregor has, the more people will buy, the better chance this has to be something actually worth seeing. And if you don't believe that, and I'm one of those who doesn't believe that, but if you don't believe that, but Floyd Mayweather, you know what he's been saying in his interviews? Maybe I should be the underdog. Maybe I'm not the fighter I used to be. I'm 40 years old. Maybe this is his time. They're now gone to 8-ounce gloves instead of 9-ounce gloves. You know, this may be favor, you know, Conor McGregor. I think all of what Floyd, this goes counter, by the way, to everything Floyd Mayweather is and who he is. He doesn't give anybody any chance, any time. And he's now selling I might lose this fight. Why? Because he's trying to sell
paper. He's got to promote.
He's trying to sell paper.
You know he has to promote. I don't, without seeing it, standing here today, I'm not sure I can picture a scenario where McGregor wins and I don't immediately question if there's something shady going on. Just because of how great Mayweather is, how inexperienced McGregor is, the money on the line, the idea of a follow-up fight, it's a circus atmosphere anyway. It's like two rodeo clowns are kind of going to step in there, and it's got a WWE element to it anyway.
Except for two things. One, 40-year-old fighter. At some point in time, age gets everyone. So at some point in time, your skills, which are so tremendous, may not be so tremendous, especially if you haven't fought in the length of time Floyd Mayweather hasn't fought. So that's one thing. The second part, and I'm throwing this against the wall, puncher's chance. You're in the ring. There have been many episodes in the history of boxing where the wrong guy won. Where the unlikely guy won.
When two boxers fought.
This is not, I know that. I'm just saying.
Like that theory applies to me stepping in the ring with Mayweather.
Okay. And I'm not saying that there's any chance. I'm just saying that big picture, an athlete, Conor McGregor is a scrappy guy, and he's a big guy. He's bigger than Floyd, and he's stronger than Floyd. And what if he just lets one go? And he gets lucky.
Well,
I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying what happens.
We were talking about that yesterday, I think, and Dave Poulin's take was that McGregor's, if he's going to have a chance to win, he's got to win almost like opening bell and come out and catch him. where Mayweather's maybe trying to ease into the fight or trying to get a read on how McGregor's going to approach it, and he gets one off early that stuns him or drops him.
See, there's a pragmatic side of this for me. And every time I think I have a fight figured out, something weird like Mike Tyson bites an ear happens. So you have to sort of, you know, enable something that you don't expect to happen.
Were you in the building for that?
No, I torn my Achilles tendon.
Would you have been if
yeah,
you had
Steve Buffery covered it for us.
Oh, no way. Beezer weaseled his way in.
No, he didn't weasel. He got there. You know, it was no weaseling. He was legit. I couldn't go to Vegas at the time. Torn Achilles is a tough one.
That is impossible to recover from quickly.
I was at the other Holyfield and
Tyson fight. The second one, wasn't it?
Was it? Yeah, it was. I think it was the second one.
No,
it was the first one.
The first one, and Holyfield beat him up pretty badly.
Yeah, it was a very one-sided fight.
Yeah.
And then he bit him, I think, in the second fight.
Just pure desperation.
Yeah. But I was ringside for Michael Spinks and Mike Tyson, which at the time, two undefeated heavyweights. And Michael Spinks, when he walked up the ring, the steps to the ring, you could see by his eyes, he wanted no part of Mike Tyson. It was like, I don't want to be here. It was almost like his trainers were pushing him up, get up the stairs and go. So he gets into the ring. The fight lasts 91 seconds. I don't believe Michael Spinks hit Mike Tyson once in those 91 seconds. I mean, it was one of the most ferocious beatings you'll ever see anyone take from a guy who was supposed to be, you know, an equal at the time. But you see, that I'm curious to see eyes.
Yeah.
You can learn things watching body language. You can learn things watching people's eyes.
Oh, yeah. Body language is a big part of the fight game.
I want to see what happens the first time Conor McGregor wants to hit him. And Mayweather just slides or slips or does what he always does. Because if two Hall of Fame boxers, Oscar De La Hoya, Manny Pacquiao, these people will be in the Hall of Fame when their careers are over, could not hit Floyd Mayweather. How in the heck is Conor McGregor going to do that?
Well, and that's what I keep asking myself. I just find it borderline impossible to believe. And I know that's a cynical view, but this is a sport that has had shady past times.
Yeah, I mean,
has a shady history. And if, to your point, Mayweather's already promoting and talking differently and... Because I also don't think he would consider this a loss in terms of the boxing world. Like, he's 49-0. I would assume that that is a record that he cherishes, and he should. If he got the L with McGregor, I don't even know if he would be concerned that that would be considered 49-1. Like, this is such an outlier. It's such a different world we're talking about with these two guys. And...
I think at this stage of his life, he's less interested in the L and more interested in the C, as in cash.
Right.
And if they make the kind of money that they're talking about...
And make McGregor wins, you can have a second fight.
I don't know if you can. I don't know if you could ever duplicate, no matter what happens. I'm not sure you can duplicate.
I think if it actually turned into a great fight, you could duplicate any great fight.
But I don't know how it can be a great fight. Like, I was thinking about this...
McGregor's got to win.
I was talking to one of my kids about this the other night. And they think they could see a knockout coming in like the 9th or 10th round because McGregor's not historically trained to go 12 rounds. And you have to go 12 rounds if you're going to go the distance in this fight. You know, he's used to UFC, what, 5 rounds in UFC?
For a championship fights.
Yeah, so, and most of his fights don't go the distance. So he's not used to this kind of distance or training or the amount of work that's involved from a boxing point of view and a conditioning point of view. So he might punch himself out without hitting Floyd per se, and then come the 9th, 10th round, he may just be out of gas and Floyd uses a combination of some kind or a body shot or something and knocks him out because Floyd doesn't have a whole lot of power left.
Yeah, that is an interesting theory. I also think what McGregor, I mean, he's trying to learn on the fly here. He's trying to get the Cole's notes on how to become a championship fighter.
You can't learn on the fly.
No, but
this is a lifelong pursuit.
But you might be able to learn some tricks. And this is where I will counter the idea that he could run out of steam. In the octagon, much like the ring, you can't run out of bounds. You can't run away. But in the octagon, they don't jockey as much as they do in boxing. And they certainly don't just clutch and grab. You know, they don't get in trouble and just sit there and say, I'm going to grab the guy. Because if you do that against the wrong guy, he'll break your arm.
Have you ever play
boxed? Put you in a choke job.
Have you ever play boxed?
Yes.
Just like fooled around?
Yeah.
3 minutes is an eternity. Like 3 minutes of boxing, which is a round, you know, you are dead tired.
But your adrenaline is running so much.
I know. But I'm saying, you know, most people who think they're in shape and try boxing, find out that there's a whole different level of conditioning involved to do it.
No question.
It's of a different world. And, you know, that first 3 rounds, that's 9 minutes. And then, and now it's 12, and now it's 15, and now it's 18. And when are you running out of gas? Like, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere along there, Conor McGregor runs out of gas.
And he's going to put on a lot of weight. Like, my understanding is he's going to cut. He's got to get to 154. But 24 hours later, or whatever, when they step in that ring, he's going to be at like 175.
Yeah.
Like he's bigger, he's thicker.
Well, that's an interesting element.
And Mayweather's going the opposite way. Mayweather's going to get to about 154, and I read yesterday, I think he plans on fighting around 150. If McGregor's got him by 25 pounds, that's a substantial amount of weight in the fight game.
It's a substantial amount of weight, but if you can't hit him, and you're slower than he is, and he can hit you to the body, then the weight means nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the Floyd Mayweather that we've seen in, say, his last 5 fights is still alive and is still that guy, I just don't see any possible way that Conor McGregor has a chance.
I'm in the same boat. Al Bernstein may have a different view on this. He's going to be calling the fight for Showtime. He'll join us in about 15 minutes. We'll get his take on this. Funny story out of Fenway last night. Very serious story featuring Fenway today. We'll tell you about that next. Have you ever thrown out an opening pitch, Steve, anywhere?
No, but the concept frightens me. You?
No, I haven't. I have no interest in ever doing it. It would be one of my worst nightmares, throwing out a first pitch at the Rogers Center. I'd be so nervous that I would do what that guy did last night at Fenway.
I loved what the guy did at Fenway.
It's unprecedented.
So long as I'm not the guy that got hit.
There's a first time for everything, including in first pitches. If you missed this last night, there was an opening pitch or a first pitch at Fenway before the Sox game last night, and there were a bunch of cameramen behind the plate, which is something you also don't see that often.
I guess it depends on who the guy making the pitch is. I guess if it's a famous guy.
Well, there was a history. He's still a young guy. I think he's 18 or 19. I believe he's a pitcher in high school, but he's a cancer survivor, and he showed up at Fenway when he was like 4 years old, and he had cancer at that time. And anyway, there's a long history, and I guess in Boston they're familiar with it. And great story, and he shows up and throws the first pitch 20 feet wide left and just...
Over some really old-looking catcher.
Yeah, I don't know who that guy was. And then crushes some camera guy right in the junk. Like square.
Well, the poor guy had his camera focused on where the pitch was coming to try and get a shot. So he can't possibly see that the ball's coming right at him.
It's not his fault. Nobody's fault, I guess, even if you're throwing the first pitch. It is, you're in uncharted territories there.
Ouch.
Yeah, not good.
Not good.
No, I've never seen that. I've seen a lot of bad first pitches. I've never seen a camera guy take one right in the junk.
One of the famous rappers had one of the worst
50 pitches. Cent.
Yeah.
50 Cent.
I've ever seen.
That was at Shea at the time, maybe City Field. I think it was for the Mets.
That wasn't worth a quarter.
No. That was really horrendous. As for Fenway, though, considering what is going on down there in the States and what happened over the weekend in Charlottesville, and now there's this big nationwide debate over statues, and there's a story out of Tampa today that I guess a statue that commemorates the Confederacy is going to be removed, and the Rays, the Bucks, and the Lightning are all pitching in money to help move this statue. And I guess Tony Dungy got this ball rolling, the idea of essentially putting together a GoFundMe account to get rid of the statue. And that's what's going to happen, because I guess the city said It's going to cost like 114 grand. I don't know why that would cost 114 grand to move a statue.
The same reason it costs all that money to build those steps in the park in Toronto.
Right. Or bring that duck in for 24 hours. Everything is bloated when the government gets involved. But anyway, that's going to happen in Tampa. They're getting rid of the statue. Trump has come out and he's advocated the idea of keeping all these statues. But in Fenway, Yawkey Way is one of the famous streets.
Named after Tom Yawkey.
Tom Yawkey, longtime owner of the Red Sox. And if you're not familiar with his backstory, he is in the Hall of Fame. But he was the owner of the Sox from 1933 through 1976. And then I guess he passed it on to his wife and the Yawkey Trust. And then John Henry bought the team in 2002. But Yawkey oversaw a 12-year stretch from 1947 to 1959 in which the Red Sox watched every other team in Major League Baseball integrate before they became the last club to do so. So, of course, Jackie Robinson in 47, slowly but surely, a domino effect. Other teams started integrating, bringing in black players. Yawkey and the Sox were the holdout. And he's got a long history, I guess, of being a racist. Henry came out today and said he's still haunted by the racist legacy of the legendary predecessor, Tom Yawkey, and he is going to change the name of that street, which is really a fascinating move. I mean, it's one that is easy to understand right now, but Boston has a long history of racial tension, and it's arguably the oldest city in the States. It's got a long history of, I mean, figures that clearly would have checkered pasts. I wonder how this is going to go over in Boston.
Here's what you can't change. You can change the name of the street, but people will hear the name Yawkey, many of whom who do not know of the history or do not know of his background. And when you hear the name Yawkey, and say you're my age, you think Boston Red Sox. You instantly think Boston Red Sox. You hear Tom Yawkey, that's Boston Red Sox. So you can remove the name and change it, and politically that's probably the right thing to do, and maybe socially it's the right thing to do. But I'm not sure you will accomplish in the end, you know, what you need to accomplish. In a different way, there's a Pete Rose Street. I don't know exactly if it's Pete Rose Way or Pete Rose whatever, outside the ballpark in Cincinnati. Of course, nowhere else in baseball where he's banned is there Pete Rose anything, really. But in Cincinnati, where he's still good old Pete Rose, then Pete Rose, it's okay to beat Pete Rose.
Now, that didn't have the same effects as a racist, right? Like, Pete Rose, he gambled on baseball.
No, he's banned from baseball.
No, I understand that.
But so here he is. The street is outside the ballpark.
Right, but
and the man is banned from baseball.
In Cincinnati, though, the street represents the greatness of Pete Rose, probably as a player. I'm sure if you go to San Francisco, there's a time where they may have a Barry Bonds way. That wouldn't surprise me either. Now, he's not going to be banned from baseball, but his history is tarnished. But I'm more wondering if this is going to change the way maybe Cooperstown works, because there are a lot of racists that are currently in Cooperstown. You know, like Ty Cobb is a guy that most people point to first and foremost just because he's an all-time great player and a self-promoting racist, like just a horrible human being.
Well, I think if you actually research through a lot of people in a whole lot of Hall of Fames, whether it be owners, whether it be coaches, whether it be managers, whether it be players in the Hockey Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame, the Football Hall of Fame, I think you'll find people who had problems, people who were racist, people who were criminals. One time, I think Clarence Campbell, the commissioner or president of the National Hockey League, went to prison. Harold Ballard, the owner of the Maple Leafs, went to prison. Didn't stop either of them from getting into the Hockey Hall of Fame. So you always have that difficulty between what's socially right and what's societally wrong and where sports plays into it all.
Well, and that's the whole thing. Like, you're dealing with, it doesn't make it right, but at the time it was a different world. It was a very different world. Now, I don't want to get overly political, but, you know, in the States, there's a lot of discussions going on about what you keep, what you don't keep. how much history is worthy of being preserved? Do you point out the obvious statements that don't get brought up all the time, that, you know, Washington was a slave owner, Jefferson was a slave owner, but that's not generally what gets promoted.
Yes, yeah, so we see them on dollar bills and things like that.
But again, I'm not condoning it. But at the time, that was the society that they lived in. Yeah,
these are questions that get more complicated,
very complicated
as times go on, and they get more complicated in a city like Boston, which already sort of has this undertone to speak of. And you look at what the history of the Celtics are, you look at what the history of the Red Sox have been, you know, and then they turned it around where the other way, where it didn't matter in any way at all. And so, you know, there's no right answer here, and there's no wrong answer here, and there's nothing that will make people who thought Tom Yawkey was a bad guy feel more comfortable about him, whether you keep the name or change the name.
Right. Yeah, and listen, it's up to the owner, I guess, to make that decision anyway. And John Henry, it sounds like he's going to go through with it. And Fenway is such a great spot. I mean,
you've kind been of a down dump. There. It's kind of a dumpy spot.
Of course it is. It's like Wrigley's the same way. If you have a building that's been around for 100 years and has had that many people pour through it, it's going to get weathered. It is weathered. Although they have renovated Fenway a lot more than Wrigley has.
It looks way better on the inside than it does on the outside. Like when you're walking up to Fenway, it's like, that's Fenway. And there's that moment of disbelief that this is the great place in baseball. Mm-hmm. Then you get in and you see all the quaintness and the nuance. And, you know, it's a fabulous place to go for a baseball game.
I don't think it comes close to Wrigleyville, like the surrounding area.
Oh, there's no real surrounding.
No, there isn't. That was what I was disappointed by. Like my wife and I were down there years ago. We went 3-4 hours before the game. And we were at like a Chili's. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Chili's to go.
It's brutal. Anyway, you're going to be down in Vegas on Tuesday.
Correct.
Mayweather-McGregor. I've been waiting for this for a long time. It's rapidly approaching. August 26th on Showtime. The event is available everywhere, from traditional TV, tablets, phones, streaming partners, movie theaters, select bars and restaurants. Plus, for the first time, the event is available directly to consumers on ShowtimePPV.com. And through the Showtime pay-per-view app. And we've got the man who's going to be a part of the broadcast team on the air. You've come across him many times.
Many times. One of the greats. And even you might catch him in the odd lounge singing.
That was something I wasn't aware of. Here is Al Bernstein. Al, can you confirm or deny that you are a lounge singer on the side?
I can confirm that, yes. I frequently have done that in Las Vegas and other places as well.
So how did you decide to do that? I mean, was that a lifelong passion or what?
Yeah, I was always interested in it. And then I was just telling somebody about it. The first time I ever did it was in 1987 before the Hagler-Leonard fight. I did three nights at the Caesars Palace leading up to that fight, and that was kind of the beginning of it. And off and on, I've continued to do it because it's an enjoyable avocation for me.
I believe I was there in 1987, when you were in that lounge, just before that brilliant fight.
Yes, yeah, that was. We had a lot of fun there. It was a fun atmosphere.
Mayweather-McGregor again, courtesy of Showtime. You can catch it on pay per view. $89.95 for standard def, $99.95 for HD. Pay per view start time at 9 p.m. August 26th. You've been in Vegas for a long time. You've called many fights. You've been kicking around the fight scene for a long time. How would you compare the build-up for this fight to others you've had in the past?
Well, this is pretty amazing. You know, I mean, I can compare it back to the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight, which I also did on Showtime pay-per-view. And that was pretty extraordinary. And this is right on a par with that and probably on a par with those great fights in the 80s in terms of build up and the interest in people. This fight's different because most boxing matches or MMA matches, people have the idea that a fight will be good, put it out there, and expect in many cases that fans will respond to it if they think it's really good. In this case, it kind of went the other way. This fight is kind of a creation of fans wanting it, and so then the boxers and the promoters and everybody made it happen. So there was kind of a grassroots movement, if you will, for this fight to happen, and now it's here.
Normally, Al, we like to have the idea that we know what's going to happen or have a sense of what's going to happen, or at least in our mind think this could possibly happen.
Right.
How do we figure out what possibly could happen when you have the best defensive fighter of his generation and a guy who's never been in the ring before?
Yeah, it's a very good, that's really a good way of putting it and phrasing it. You know, what makes, that's part of what makes this fight kind of unique, that there's so many unknowns to it. And in putting the keys to victory together for the fight, I was struck with that same thing, and I'm watching him as a mixed martial artist, but we know that's different. We know that you strike differently and you have to worry about different things coming at you. And we don't even know, like, for instance, we talk about what works against Floyd Mayweather. We know that the style of Marcos Maidana or Jose Luis Castillo, that's what works against Mayweather when you can make it happen. And I thought the first Marcos Maidana Mayweather fight, very close, maybe even a draw. First time Jose Luis Castillo fought Mayweather, I actually thought he beat him. You have to get inside, push him to the ropes, work him, muscle him. We don't even, that's not even the way Conor McGregor fights when he's in stand up as an MMA artist. So if he's going to use his physicality, which he wants to, because he, you know, they're fighting at a weight that he's much more comfortable at, 154. He's fought there 10 times at 155, the MMA limit, and Mayweather's only fought twice at 154. So if he's going to use that physicality, he's got to get inside. We're not even sure that that's the style he would fight as a fighter.
We're joined by Al Bernstein of Showtime. Again, August 26th, Mayweather-McGregor. You can watch it courtesy of pay-per-view up here. And Al's joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. News coming out yesterday that the commission down in Nevada accepted the request from both fighters, I would presume, to go from 10-ounce gloves to 8-ounce gloves. That is unprecedented, as far as I know, based on this weight class. How do you think that could affect the fight, them fighting with 8-ounce gloves?
Yeah, the difference is not wildly different, but it could be enough for somebody to maybe land a big punch and have it be a little more effective. In theory, the conventional wisdom is that McGregor would want it more than Mayweather, and yet Mayweather was the one that pushed it more. I think partially because he thought it was a good marketing tool for the fight. To give people the idea that if McGregor can land that one punch, that the 8-ounce gloves, which are certainly closer to the 4-ounce gloves that he fights with in MMA, will help McGregor. It's hard to tell which one is going to help the most, but it could be a factor.
Here's what I wonder about with the weight situation. If the weigh-in is for 154, and McGregor comes out as he's talked about and planned to be in the 170s by fight night, how difficult will it be for someone like Floyd Mayweather at 150 pounds to be fighting somebody possibly at 175 pounds?
Yeah, it's a good point. The people he's fought at 154 before, Canelo Alvarez and Miguel Cotto, Cotto definitely was not a big 154-pounder. Cotto is not, Canelo is not either, really. So it wasn't like he was fighting guys, like if he fought Golovkin at 154, we would know that that's a slightly bigger fighter squeezing down. In this case, he's fighting kind of a bigger man who has fought at a higher weight, fought as high as 170, in fact. So from a physical standpoint, he could have an impact if McGregor can get close enough to him and muscle him. And Pat Miletic, the famed MMA fighter and analyst, was telling me just the other day that he feels like that McGregor leaning on him, constantly using certain tools of mixed martial arts in the grappling part, could help him wear Mayweather down. And he said McGregor needs to fight a dirty fight within the rules, which is an interesting point. I agree. He's got to use his physicality and not worried about being warned maybe for something once or twice.
What do you have to see out of McGregor, even if he loses, to believe that he could have a future in boxing?
Well, I don't even know if he wants a future in boxing, but to believe that he's credible, I think he's going to need to, he's going to have to get this fight into the third, fourth, fifth round and be making something happen, be leaning on Mayweather, be roughing him up, be getting him in the ropes, and landing some punches. Maybe mixing in a good left hand, which he's got a very good left hand. This is the problem we don't know with McGregor. You know, he's been 25 minutes, because it's 5 rounds and 5 minutes a round in MMA. He hasn't been beyond that. So what happens in round 7, round 8 or 9, when you're in that, place you haven't been to before, and how will he do? We've seen signs of fatigue for McGregor even in MMA fights. So it will be interesting to see, even as the fight wears on, whether he can sustain his attack.
Can you see Floyd getting mad and wanting to end this early?
I don't know about mad, but they keep saying that he wants to go after him now. Of course, that's before the fight where they're trying to sell tickets. But there is no question, when Floyd Mayweather gets into his seek and destroy mode, as he did against Diego Corrales and a few others, he can make things happen. And here's the other thing. All the time before in the sport, he doesn't have the greatest hands in the world in terms of durability. He has a lot of problems with his hands. If this is truly his last fight, he may feel a little more inclined to go for broke and not worry about, his hands being more sore, because he doesn't have another fight 6 months from now.
Mayweather McGregor, August 26th, for the first time ever, this event available directly to consumers on ShowtimePPV.com and through the Showtime pay-per-view app. The price, $89.95, standard def up here, $99.95 for HD. He is Al Bernstein. He will be ringside calling it, and we certainly look forward to it. Thank you so much for doing this, and enjoy the fight.
Good to be with you guys. You take care.
There he is, Al Bernstein, joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are now on with 0% financing and lease rates on the Corolla and RAV4. Visit mapletoyota.ca. I'm looking forward to the fight.
As it gets closer, at first, I went through this as a complete scam kind of idea. And then I went through watching all the promotion and the excitement of all the promotion and thought, well, this is kind of interesting. Now I'm just curious to see how it unfolds. It's close enough now. It's like, how are they going to come out? How are they going to approach it? How are they going to fight? Is it possible for McGregor in any way to get to Mayweather? That's still the question in my mind.
I hope he can pull it off. I'm hoping for an entertaining fight. I think the shock of the world and what would offer me the most material on the Monday is McGregor winning. I think if Mayweather just kind of dances around and it's a lame fight and it even goes to the judges, but it's an obvious decision before it even gets to the final bell, I think collectively we'll all look back and say, I can't believe I spent $100 on this.
I was at a friend's place for for both of Mayweather's fights, the one against Pacquiao and the one against De La Hoya. And it was, typical. We ordered a pile of food. We had a bunch of people there. It was a social night.
Mm-hmm.
The worst part about the night was the fight. It was completely without tension. It was completely uninteresting. I worry that this will be the same because it's Floyd Mayweather's M.O., he's not against a fighter of their caliber, which may mean he might take even more chances than he normally does. But normally he's a very conservative guy who fights a very sound, well-thought-out game plan. His intention is not to be touched and to find a way to win. And I remember each of the times we went to the same friend's house, had the same people together, and I thought to myself, I'm glad I went. I'm glad we had dinner. I'm glad I hung with my friends. Boy, that was not the least bit entertaining.
Yeah, the same experience. I had a housewarming, actually. I had it at my house. Clearly, if you're going to have a housewarming, it's going to be at your house for the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. People came out. We had a bunch of food, a bunch of drinks, and then people were really jacked up for the fight. Guys come down the aisle, get the ring, bell rings, and the party just kind of evaporated. Yeah. And then right after the fight, people are like, all right, I'm not in the mood to stick around.
Yeah, everyone leaves.
I don't care about your house.
The second of the decision, it was gone. Yeah, it's usually pretty late by then anyhow.
It can be, but if you have a great fight, people want to stick around and talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, what was the turning point of the fight? What happened? Can you believe this? Can there be a rematch? Everyone had the same experience. The fight sucked, and that's it. We're not going to see it again.
Well, it was funny. At my friend's house, because I had done so many fights historically, everyone wanted to know before the fight what I thought was going to happen. And when I told them what was going to happen, they kind of dismissed what I said. I said, it's going to be boring. You're not going to be that interested. this is what's going to happen. And basically both went exactly to game plan. And they looked at me afterwards and said, you know, you kind of ruined our night.
You called it.
I called it, but they weren't happy that I called it.
Well, and the thing is also about the whole Mayweather promotion, he's promoting that McGregor has a shot. I found it interesting that Bernstein kind of looked at the whole glove stuff going from 10 ounces to 8 ounces as a promotional tactic also. Mayweather hoping that people believe that gives McGregor a better opportunity. But once he's in the ring, the promotion's done. He doesn't have to put on a show. Like, I've heard some people think, oh, maybe he'll just toy with him or he'll try to push the fight into the 7th, 8th, 9th round. The pay-per-views are bought. It's done.
You're not selling anymore.
You're not selling.
Once, unless you're going to do it a second time. And to be honest, there's so much money in this, so why would you even care or need to do it a second time?
Well, but the truth is, apparently he's broke. Like, he needs, or he's not broke, but
he needs to pay a ton of taxes.
Like $30 million in taxes.
Yeah, once he gets this fight, his purse, he'll have the $30 million in taxes. He'll have the rest of his taxes that he'll owe on the money that he's making, and he'll still probably have like $50 million left.
You would think.
Give or take
a dollar.
But
you never know he's already spent that he owes money on and how in debt he is.
I'm not doing his taxes.
No. This is a guy who's made a fortune, but so did Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson made like $300 million. He's broke. Jim Popp will join us of the Argos. Argos playing the Alouettes this weekend. It sounds as if Ricky Wright will be returning. We'll get you an update on that. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. So we've got Jay Cutler again making his Miami Dolphins debut tonight. So I'm pretty locked in.
You're pushing this thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to watch NFL preseason.
It's impossible. Borderline impossible. Especially, you need Jay Cutler, the great savior, to show up.
Especially after the first quarter. You watch tonight. He'll come out, zip. Jarvis Landry touchdown pass. Or something like that.
Well, this is where, like, gamblers don't sleep on preseason games. Those are the only guys truly watching and really invested. You know, have a problem with gambling when you're betting on like week two preseason football. In the fourth quarter, you've got the fifth stringer out of a D3 league returning a football, and you need him to bring it to the house for you to secure some cash.
I haven't investigated this deeply, but I suspect you could make some decent money betting unders in exhibition football.
Vegas doesn't mess up with football, though. I'll bet you that's not the case.
Okay.
Well. Football's the only one that they always hammer. They always get it right on because the most money is there.
Well, I'm not going to argue that. This sport was made for gambling in so many different ways, whether it's point spreads, whether it's over-unders, whether it's
prop bets
throughout
everything.
The game. I have friends now, by the way. I'm not on these fancy website gambling things. But there are people now who are betting games as they're going on.
Oh, yeah. Live betting is huge.
Live betting has become really big.
All right. We'll talk more about that and whether or not it could apply to other sports. And Jim Popp will join us, GM of the Argos. He's coming up in the next hour. Simmons is in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.